sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we have Boston Blackie in the case of the hired killer. But first, on the lighter side, let's enjoy some time with Fibber McGee and Molly. Fibber McGee and Molly was the story of Jim and Marion Jordan, one of childhood sweethearts from the Peoria Sticks, making it big in Hollywood. It began in radio in 1924 at radio station WIBO, hired as the O'Henry twins at $10 a week. By 1935, their program went to NBC Blue as Fibber McGee and Molly for Johnson's Wax. By April of 41, Fibber McGee and Molly topped Jack Benny and Bob Hope to lead all the shows in the ratings wars. The program was dropped as a weekly half-hour feature after the program of June 30th, 1953, returning in October as a five-day-a-week 15-minute show, which continued until 1957. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Fibber McGee and Molly from October of 1939 in Best Kept Lawn, another classic show from the golden age of radio here on Yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent. Oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Mar, Jamis, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so. Dio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
The makers of Johnson's Wax present Marion and Jim Jordan as Fibber McGee and Molly with Donald Novis, Bill Thompson, and Billy Mills Orchestra. The show opens with Fine and Dandy. When the frost is on the pumpkin and the fodder's in the shock, when the squirrels are hiding peanuts under every log and rock, when mince pie returns to menus and the stores dust off the holly, here's autumn, here's October, and here's F. McGee and Molly.
McGee, look at those leaves out there on the front lawn. Why, it's disgraceful. I thought you were going to rake them up today.
Oh, what's the hurry, Molly? It took them 7 months to fall down. I guess they can wait an hour to be raked up.
Well, now I tell you, Mr. Gildersleeve next door has been complaining.
Oh, that guy.
He said our leaves keep blowing over in his yard.
Well, what am I supposed to do? Arrange for the wind to blow down some other street? Shucks, I can't control the
wind. Well, the fact remains, McGee, you promised to rake up those leaves today.
Can't do it, Molly. Not today.
Why not?
The rake's busted.
Who busted it?
Oh, well, it ain't exactly busted. Matter of fact, I used the handle to put up a trapeze in the garage. And you know what, Molly? I chinned myself 9 times this morning. Oh, without taking my hand.
Well, if you think you're going to chin yourself out of raking up those leaves, you're better. Come in.
Mr. and Mrs. McGee?
Yes?
Did you read The Grapes of Wrath?
What if we did, Bud? Who are you?
Oh, just one of the bunch. Wow!
Of all the silly...
Say, I hear one of the moving picture companies has bought that book, McGee.
Oh, if they don't work faster on that than they did on Gone with the Wind, they'll have to call it The Raisins of Zanuck.
Well, we're off the subject again, dearie.
What subject?
Breaking up the leaves.
Oh, that's okay. I was tired of it anyway.
McGee, I believe you're just plain lazy.
Oh, you wrong me, Mrs. McGee. Physical activity in itself ain't important.
Oh, it isn't?
I know. A rooster can strut around flapping his wings and crowing, but it's the quiet little hen sitting around all day who really produces.
Well, now, if you can sit there and hatch out some way to get those leaves raked up without a hole.
Come in.
Oh, it's Mr. Gildersleeve.
Oh, hi, Gil. What can I do for you?
You can keep your old dead leaves on your own front lawn, McGee. That's what you can do for me.
Oh, is that so? What do you want me to do, run out and lay a paperweight on every leaf?
Don't be ridiculous. I realize you can't keep the leaves from falling off the tree.
Oh, you admit that?
Yes, I do.
Oh, you do?
Yes, I do.
Oh, gentlemen, gentlemen. I don't think it's worth quarreling about.
Well, I do, Mrs. McGee.
So do I, Molly. Come on, Gildersleeve, let's quarrel.
All right. Now look here, McGee. Why don't you do as the rest of the homeowners in this block do? Keep your lawn raked up. Every time I clean my lawn, the next morning I find your leaves have blown it over it again.
Well, so what? Am I a truant officer for dead leaves? A traffic cop for tired foliage?
That's not the point, McGee. Furthermore, I don't like your attitude.
Oh, you don't? And how would you describe my attitude?
Sitting down generally.
I think your attitude is definitely antagonistic.
Oh, you're too fussy, Gildersleeve.
Yes, I am fussy. Well, I take a great deal of pride in the appearance of my property, McGee.
I can understand that, but do we complain because your lilac bushes smell up the whole neighborhood? No. You mind your yard and we'll mind our yard.
Well, why don't you then?
Well, I like leaves flying around loose, that's why. More informal. I ain't one to interfere with nature.
I suppose I interfere with nature.
Well, I heard a rumor one day that you gave your morning glories a bawling out for opening up 10 minutes late.
Please, gentlemen, please. This is no way for good neighbors to talk.
Ah, we ain't good neighbors. We're enemies. Ain't we, Gildersleeve?
Yes, we are.
You betcha.
The best of enemies. You think I'm a stuffed shirt and I think you're a gabby little good-for-nothing runt.
There, you see, Molly? You don't find me and Gildersleeve indulging in no sentimental hands across the back fence drivel.
Mrs. McGee, your husband is impossible.
I am not. I may be a little improbable, but I ain't impossible.
Well, I think I can assure you, Mr. Gildersleeve, that our yard will be raked up today, sure.
Thank you.
Incidentally, Gildersleeve, you got a rake I can borrow?
I have a rake, but I'm using it to take your leaves from my yard. And I'm dumping them all back over the hedge onto your lawn.
My leaves, eh?
Yes, your leaves.
You admit they're mine, eh?
Admit it? Of course I admit it.
Okay, then I warn you, Gildersleeve. I'm very proud of them leaves. And if I find any of them damaged when you send them back, I'll... you know, I kind of like that guy, Molly. I'm sorry I didn't get to know him sooner. Think of the swell arguments we've missed.
Say, aren't you ashamed, dearie?
Huh?
You should try and keep on good terms with your neighbors. You don't get far without friends, you know.
Well, you don't have much excitement without enemies, either. Maybe you're right. I'll call up Mrs. Uppington and see if she's got a rake I can borrow. Hand me the phone.
Here.
Thanks. Hello, operator. Give me Wistful Vista 670... Oh, is that you, Mert? River McGee. Give me Mrs. Uppington. Oh, the line's busy, eh? Well, how's everything, Mert? Huh? Who? Your sister, eh? Got pinched, eh?
Heavenly day.
What's that, Mert? Well, she was bound to get caught sooner or later. Did you get her out? Huh? Oh, I see. No, I won't say anything about it. Okay, Mert. What do you know about that, Molly?
What happened?
Mert's sister had on one of them new bustle dresses and got pinched going through a revolving door.
isn't getting the leaves raked up.
Huh? Oh, yeah, the leaves. Well, I'll run over to Uppington's and borrow a rake. I'll be right back, Molly.
I better go with you.
Why, Molly, do you think I'd try to evade raking up them leaves? Don't you trust me?
Oh, yes, I guess I do, dearie.
Well, you better come anyway. I don't trust myself. Let's go.
Only 60 cents a gallon. Nothing like it to liven you up at a Halloween party. Matter of fact, there's nothing like it to liven you up. In other words, there's nothing like it.
No, thank you, Mr. Oldtimer. I don't believe we want any.
Hey!
She says we don't want any, Oldtimer. Besides, I swore off that stuff. Not only sneaks up on you, it follows you around for 4 days.
That's pretty good, Johnny. But that ain't the way I heard it. The way I heard it, one feller says to t'other feller, say, have you seen them new automobiles with a bed built in the back seat? Have I, says t'other feller. I ain't only seen them. I just got my wife a job as chambermaid in the parking lot. Well, sorry you don't want any cider, kid. It's good for what oils you or ails you.
That old fossil. I'd like to meet that guy outside some bright night, Molly.
Why, McGee?
Well, I think ruins are much prettier by moonlight. One side there, Mrs. McGee. You bother me.
Oh, look up there, McGee.
Huh?
There goes a flock of geese flying south for the winter.
Oh, describe them to me, Molly. I'm too busy raking.
Never mind.
Oh, there, McGee. I'm glad to see you're finally raking those leaves up.
Listen, Gildersleeve, let's you and me play Stanley and Livingston.
Stanley and Livingston?
Yeah, only with a new twist. Let's pretend we never discovered each other.
Oh, McGee, please.
That's all right, Mrs. McGee. If that's the way he wants it. I merely saw him raking up these leaves, so I came over to bury the hatchet.
Oh, skip it, Gildersleeve. When a guy wants to bury the hatchet, he usually's got an axe to grind. Now go away and let me work, will you?
Oh, come, come, boys. After all, we're neighbors, you know.
Well, Chuck.
My, my, all this fuss over a pile of dead leaves.
There'll be no dead leaves on his family tree. It's too sappy.
Oh, yeah. There's a cuckoo nest someplace in yours, too.
Is that so?
Yes, that's so.
McGee, I didn't like that remark. I don't think I like you either. I know I don't like your face.
Oh, yeah. You want to make something of it?
I'm too old for Halloween parties, or I'd like to make a mask of it. Good day, McGee!
Ah, that guy kills me, Mark.
Well, that's the first bit of foresight you've shown for a long time, dearie.
Oh, I'm just kidding him. Hey there, little girl. Quit playing in that pile of leaves. I just raked them up.
Well, gee, I'm just gonna look for some pretty leaves, I betcha.
Oh. You are, eh?
Hmm?
I says you are, eh?
Or what?
Gonna look for some pretty leaves.
Gee, that's a dandy idea. I guess I will, too.
Well, you are the one. Oh, I get it. Look, sis, run along home and don't bother me. I got all these leaves to rake up.
Hey, mister, what makes leaves turn all different colors like this? What does? Why don't they stay green all the time?
Well, they're only green in the spring and summer, sis. They always turn red in the fall.
Why?
That red, how should I know? Well, I'll tell you, sis. You know what a stop-and-go sign is?
Sure I do, I betcha.
Well, leaves are nature's stop-and-go signs.
Yeah.
You see, sis, in the spring, the leaves are green, and that means go. So the snow goes and the cold goes, and little girls go out and play.
Gee. Yeah.
And then in the fall, the leaves turn red. That means stop. Stop and put on your mittens. Stop vacation from school. Stop and look for Santa Claus.
Oh, goody.
You get the idea, sis?
No.
Hmm. Well, what's the matter? Don't you understand?
Yes, but I bet you don't, I bet you.
Huh?
The real reason the leaves turn red in the fall is that, subsequent to the autumn equinox, the diminishing power of the solar rays is inadequate to supply the necessary chlorophyll to the foliage, thus resulting in the phenomenon familiar to us all of brilliant coloration. So don't give me any of that malarkey about stop and go light.
Folks, Donald Novus gives us an old favorite of his and ours and yours, Diane. Take it, Don.
I'm in heaven when I see you smile, smile for me, my Diane. And though everything's dark all the while, I can see you, Diane. You have lighted the road leading home. Pray for me when you can. And wherever, my darling, I roam, smile for me, my have lighted the road leading home. Pray for me when you can. But wherever, my darling, I roam, smile for me.
Better hurry up and finish raking those leaves, dearie. I think there's a bit of a wind coming up.
Okay. When I get all these leaves piled up and burned, Molly, you know what I'm going to do?
What?
I'm going to lean the rake up against the hedge with its teeth snarling into Gildersleeve's window. Just to remind him that he...
Well, for scream's sake, Fizzer. What in the name of, for the love of Mike, are you doing laboring with Manuel?
Hello, Mr. DeCopolis.
Oh, hi, Nick. Oh, I'm just raking up these leaves. You'll excuse me if I go right on working. We're afraid the wind will come up before I get through.
Oh, that's awfully duckly, Fizzer. And speaking of wind, I'm reading an awfully sweet little stories last night in a book by a man named Egypt, who is always writing a lot of fables.
Oh, I think you mean Aesop, who wrote the fables.
I think I do, too. Anyway, this story is being all about the north wind and the sun. And in the book, they are both able to talk, which is not true in real life. Though if the sun could talk, he would probably get off some hot stuff. You know what I mean, and if you don't, neither of us is missing much.
Maybe you better tell us later, Nick. I gotta get these leaves raked up.
Oh, you don't bother me, Fizzer. I can tell you just as if you were loafing as usual. Well, sir, it seems that the wind and the sun were having an argument about who is having the most strong personalities. So they are deciding to take turns to make a traveling man take off his coat. The north wind is blowing and blowing with a huff and a poof. And the man is only buttoning his coat all the more tighter. Then the sun is
yes,
trying...
Yes, we know, and... Nick. The sun got hotter and hotter, and finally the guy took off his coat and the sun won the bet. So what?
Well, so it is all going to prove a little fact which is full of philosophy, poor Spizzer. And the moral of the story is being, arguments is being won by brightness, not by being a blowhard. Say.
Hey.
Say, I think there is a windy breeze coming up. I better go raise the awning on my candy kitchen. Well, so long, QP. So long, Fizzer.
Heavenly days, McGee. The wind is getting stronger.
Dad, Brad, ain't that just my luck? And here I am on my last pile of leaves. Oh dear,
there they go, McGee. I'm going to run in the house and close the window.
You better hurry, Molly. It looks like a hurricane. Hey. Hey, get that sheriff on the horse. Molly, come here.
My, that was quite a blow, wasn't it, dearie? What did you want?
Look at this lawn. Am I the sap? What did I rake my arms off for?
Heavenly days, there isn't a leaf left, is there?
No, not here. Look over at Gildersleeve's yard.
Oh.
They're piled up 3 feet deep.
McGee! Now look here, McGee.
Oh, the voice of experience.
I've had about enough of this nonsense. Look at those leaves of yours on my lawn.
Oh, well, what are you going to do about it, Gildersleeve? Have me pinched for blowing up a 40-mile gale in a 20-mile zone?
Don't be ridiculous. But you could have raked those leaves up sooner. Oh. Look at my lawn. It's disgraceful. I'm going to see my lawyer about this, McGee. I'll take this to the United States Supreme Court.
Well, if falling leaves is unconstitutional, maybe we don't...
Oh, how do you do, Mrs. McGee? And Mr. McGee?
Oh, how do you do, Mrs. Uppington?
Hi, Uppy.
Nay, that was quite a storm we had, wasn't it? Almost a tycoon.
Typhoon.
Pardon me?
Typhoon, Mrs. Uppington. Typhoon.
Yes, a tycoon is a big businessman.
Yeah, like me.
Oh, yes, of course. Well, I suppose one big bag of wind is just the same as...
Yes, very good.
Oh, pardon me, Mrs. Leffingwell, how rude of me. Mrs. McGee, may I present Mrs. Leffingwell?
How do you do? How do you do, I'm sure.
And Mr. McGee, Mrs. Leffingwell?
How do you do?
How do you do? And Mrs. Uppington, this is Mr. Gildersleeve.
Oh, how do you do?
How do you do?
Mr. Leffingwell, Mr. Gildersleeve.
How do you do?
How do you do?
This is a pretty how-do-you-do, ain't it, folks? You say your name is Leffingwell, sis?
Yes, Mrs. Wentworth Leffingwell.
Oh, well, it's nice to know you, Lefty. You a pal of Uppy's?
Well, you might say so, Mr. McGee. I'm working with Mrs. Uppington on a committee.
Oh, how cozy. Now, won't you ladies come in and have a cup of coffee?
Oh, thank you, no, Mrs. McGee.
Some other time, Mrs. McGee.
I will, Mrs. McGee.
She didn't ask you, Gildersleeve.
Nice of you to ask us, Mrs. McGee, but really, this is more or less in the nature of a business call.
Oh, okay, Uppy, here's your rake. I'd have brung it back if you'd have waited.
Oh, I was not referring to the rake, Miss McGee. Mrs. Leffingwell and I are on the Better Homes and Gardens Committee of the Ladies' Club.
Oh, yes, the Ladies' Club. I believe my wife has spoken
quiet,
about it.
Quiet, Gildersleeve.
Quiet,
Better Homes and Gardens, eh, Uppy? Well, if it's advice you're looking for, you come to the right place. I always was quite a hand with trees and flowers.
And leaves.
Yes, sir, I mind one time years ago I had me one of the finest prune orchards in the country.
Oh, not really.
Fancy that. Yeah,
fancy prunes, too. My prunes were so big they whipped every other grower at the state fair. Prune Whip McGee, I was known as in them days. Prune Whip McGee, the pinnacle of perfection as a producer of prunes, peaches, pears, and pomegranates, proudly picking, packing, and purveying them to persnickety people who are pleased as punch to pay a pretty penny to possess such priceless packages of palatable products, and personally publicized as the premier paragon of the planner's profession from the present parks of old Peoria to the, pardon me, girls, does all this bore you?
I'm sure it didn't bore us a bit, Miss McGee. Did it, Hildegard?
Oh, very little, if any.
Well, it bored me.
Oh, well, you're too easily bored, Gildersleeve. A woodpecker could have fun with you.
Is that so?
Oh, yes. Now, gentlemen.
As I remarked before, our club's Better Homes and Gardens Committee have been making a survey to see who had the best-kept lawn.
And of all the lawns in the neighborhood, Mr. McGee, yours is by far the neatest.
Here's... Now, listen here, ladies. You...
Hey, wait a minute. The committee has the floor, Gildersleeve.
Well, thank you. And so, Mr. McGee, we are happy to present you with this silver plaque for the best-kept lawn in Wistful Vista.
Oh, my.
Well, thanks.
Will you have your coffee now, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Hey, Molly, did you see that invitation we got to the NBC Halloween party?
No, I didn't. Who's going to be there?
Oh, everybody. Me and Bob Hope are handling the entertainment.
Oh, you get paid?
Oh, just a nominal sum. They get me for peanuts and Bob for apples.
Oh.
Good night.
Bob for apples. Good night, all.
This is Harlow Wilcox, inviting you all to be with us again next week at this same time. Good night.
The selection comes, love, is from Yokel Boy. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
From October of 1939, it's been Fibber McGee and Molly in Best Kept Lawn. In a moment, some adventure with Boston Blackie as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Boston Blackie was one of the most memorable names of radio and early TV as well as an answer to the B-movie. In fact, the character started in the B-movie, Columbia's Meet Boston Blackie, in 1941. By 1944, Chester Morris, the screen Blackie, came to NBC with a Boston Blackie air show sponsored by Rinso and announced by Harlow Wilcox as a summer replacement for Amos and Andy. Blackie was a private detective with a flair for smart comment. Billed as enemy to those who make him an enemy, friend to those who have no friends, Blackie liked nothing better than to make the cops look crazy. Richard Lane played Faraday, and Leslie Woods played Blackie's girlfriend, Mary. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Boston Blackie in Hired Killer from October of 1947. Another classic program from the audio vault of yesteryear.
Mr. Peterson, Joe Crane.
Oh, just a minute.
Come in, quick.
It's okay, Mr. Peterson. There's nobody on the street. Nobody saw me.
You sure no one saw you?
Yeah, I'm sure.
I hope you're right. Right on time. It's exactly 5 o'clock.
Well, you hired me for 5 p.m, so here I am at 5 sharp. Want to get started right away?
Yes, the sooner we get it over with, the better. There's the rope and something to gag me with. You can tie me to this chair here.
Okay. You just sit down and take it easy, Mr. Peterson. It'll all be over before you know it.
All right. Tie me good and tight, Joe. I want this to look like the real thing.
Right, I'm doing just that. Ropes feel tight, don't they?
Oh, so they do.
Well, don't worry then, Mr. Peterson. This job will look McCoy enough to fool the smartest cops in town. But you're tied in that chair so tight, you're practically part of it. All right, which room is your wife in?
That one right there. Now put the gag on me and kill her in a hurry, will you?
You leave everything to me, Mr. Peterson. Gag on, good and tight? I guess it's on good enough. That's the door to your wife's room right there, huh? Okay. Hey, Mrs. Peterson.
Yes?
Come on out here.
Who is it?
It's me, Joe. Joe Crane.
Oh, what do you want? What have you done to Arnold?
Nothing he didn't want me to do.
What are you talking about?
Just this. He hired me to come in and tie him up and gag him.
What on earth for?
So that then I could kill you. He'd have an alibi.
Oh, no.
No, huh? Well, that's what you think. This husband of yours is no good.
I'm beginning to believe that.
Well, in that case, stick around and watch me kill him. You might have some fun.
You're not going to kill him.
You better not make any bets on things you say. I never saw a woman so wrong in my life.
Don't kill him. Please don't kill him.
How do you like that? A guy hires me to kill his wife. She begs me not to knock him off.
I don't want you to bother.
Huh?
Leave him to me. I'll take care of him myself.
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now meet Dick Calmer as Boston Blackie. Enemy to those who make him an enemy. Friend to those who have no friend.
Blackie, I've come to see you because I'm in terrible...
I know what you're in, Mr. Smith. Terrible trouble. But take my advice instead of my help and go to the police, will you?
Do the police lend money to strangers?
No, neither do I. Is that what you want from me, money?
Money or help?
Of the two, I prefer giving you help. But if it's money you want, why don't you go to a bank?
I can't.
Why not?
Well, it's like this.
Yeah?
I owe Arnold Peterson $50,000. Now, if I could go to a bank and get a loan for my business, I'd be able to pay Peterson back within 6 or 8 months.
Uh-huh.
But Peterson wants his money right now.
Why?
Well, because he knows I can't pay him right now. And if I go to a bank for the money, he'll block the loan.
Doesn't make any sense, Mr. Smith. Peterson wants his $50,000. He ought to let you borrow it.
Well, if all he wanted was his $50,000, he'd wait a few months for it. What he really wants is to ruin me and put me out of business. That's why he's demanding immediate payment of the money I owe him. That's why he'll block any loan I try to get from a bank or a finance company.
Well, what do you want me to do about it?
Well, either lend me the money or try to persuade Peterson to give me time. Oh, Blackie, Peterson's made my life miserable ever since we had a run-in in our early days.
I still don't see what I can do. I haven't the kind of money you
will
need,
you
and
see
I...
see Peterson and talk to him and try to reason with him.
Well, I'm busy on another matter right now, but can I call him later? What's his phone number?
Eastern 99898.
Wait a minute, I'll write that down. Eastern 9898. All right. I'll call him in an hour or so and then get in touch with you by phone and let you know what happened. Will you be home?
Yes, and I have a phone, and I'll be waiting for your call. Bye.
All right, Smith. Goodbye, and be a good boy.
Homicide, Faraday speaking.
Inspector Faraday?
Yes, Inspector Faraday.
Inspector, this is a friend.
Well, what do you want, friend?
Nothing at all. I just want to give you a little tip.
Go ahead, I'm listening.
Good idea, Inspector. This is a friendly little tip.
Yeah, I know, from a friend. You said that. Now, what's on your mind?
Listen, Killer Joe Crane's in town, Inspector. Just got in. You know what that means, don't you?
Yeah, I know exactly what that means. When Joe Crane comes to town, a murder comes right after.
wasn't anybody. Well, Arnold Peterson, if you want something to see. You don't mind a visit from your old friend Bill Smith, do you, Arnold? I can't understand what you're saying. Not a word behind that gag. Hey, wait a minute, I'll take it off. What happened here, Arnold? This house is a mess, and where's your wife? There. You feel good with the gag off?
Yes. Thanks a lot, Bill. You want to know where my wife is?
Yes.
Double-crosser female ran off and left me.
Well, and tied you up first?
No, she had help in that department. Untie me, will you, Bill?
Why, sure.
I'm sure glad you came along. Might have sat in this chair till I starved to death.
Well, that would be an unpleasant way to die, wouldn't it?
Is there a way that's pleasant? Untie me, will you?
I'm not sure I will, Arnold. I just got an idea.
Hey, what are you talking about?
Not what I came here to talk about. The money I owe you, I didn't expect to find you tied to a chair, the house in a mess, and Sally gone.
Look, will you untie these ropes?
No, Arnold, I won't. I've just had a wonderful idea. Know what this is, Arnold?
Put that gun away, you fool.
I will after I've used it on you.
Don't, Bill. Don't be an idiot. Nobody ever gets away with murder.
But I'm not a nobody, Arnold, and I've just had an idea.
But I'm going to
get away with a perfect alibi.
Bill,
and I'm going to get that alibi from Boston Blackie.
You might hurry, you know, Blackie. It isn't everybody I'd come to pick up and then wait for.
It's just 7:30 now. I'm not late. Be with you in just a minute, Mary. Then off to dinner we go. Fair enough?
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. I think... Oh, all I know is that that isn't the dinner bell.
Get the phone. It won't be a thing.
Uh-huh.
Hello.
Blackie?
Yeah?
This is Bill Smith.
Hi, Bill. Say, I've been meaning to call you. I tried to reach your friend Arnold Peterson, but no one answers the phone at his place.
Well, that's what I wanted to find out. I thought perhaps you'd gotten to him and had something encouraging to tell me that... Just a minute. I'll be right there. There's somebody at the door. Would you call me back in a minute or so?
Well, sure. What's your number?
Oakville 41561.
Live in the suburbs, huh? Okay, Smith. Go answer your door. I'll call you right back. One more second now, Mary. Just want to call Bill Smith back and then we'll go.
Uh-huh.
Operator, I want Oakville 41561, please.
Oakville 41561. Just a minute, please.
Hello?
This is Blackie, Bill.
Yeah?
Now, what was it you wanted to say to me?
Oh, about Peterson. I just wanted to be sure you called the right number.
Well, I called the number you gave me, Eastern 99898. I dialed it myself.
That's the right number, all right. I can't understand why it doesn't answer.
Neither can I. But I'll catch up with him later. Take it easy, Bill. When I promise to do a guy a favor, I do him a favor.
You don't know what a favor you've done me already.
All right, you guys, get those fingerprints down to headquarters for checking.
Here's the picture of Peterson's wife, Inspector Faraday.
I see.
I found some papers in the desk that show her name before she married him was Crane.
Crane, huh, Matthews?
Yeah.
Well, that's a coincidence, isn't it? I got a tip that killer Joe Crane has come to town, and the husband of a Crane is found dead. Did you send out an alarm to pick up Crane and Peterson's wife? She's obviously on the run.
We'll have men watching every railroad station, bus, and air terminal.
That's fine.
Oh, by the way, Sergeant Williams talked to the woman next door. I think we know the time of death.
Good.
She says she heard what sounded like three shots at 7:30. And Peterson was shot three times.
And the noise came from here?
Yep.
Well, that fits with the coroner's preliminary report on the time of death. He was killed at 7:30, all right. Now, let's see.
Hello, Faraday. Guess who?
I know who, and without turning around. Now, get out of here, Blackie.
Oh, Faraday, you don't mean that, do you? Who makes jokes for you when I'm not around?
Nobody. And you better make tracks, right now.
I wouldn't leave for anything, Faraday. I heard on my car radio you needed my help, so I came right over.
No.
I could tell you the name of your killer, Faraday, Bill Smith, guy with a motive to kill Peterson, wasn't 30 miles away from here when Peterson was shot.
How do you know when Peterson was shot?
I heard Matthews here say the time was 7:30. And the man I have in mind was 30 miles away from here at 7:30. I know, because I called his house and talked to him on the phone. Who do you think did it, Barney?
I don't know. But Killer Joe Crane is in town, and Peterson's wife's name used to be Crane.
Really? Maybe so, but I have a hunch that Crane is not the bird who did this job.
We've timed this just right, Sally.
Yeah.
This cab will get us to the station only a couple of minutes before train time.
The station will be full of cops, won't it, Joe?
Maybe, but we won't be there long enough for them to spot us. Sally, you did a nice job.
You didn't do such a bad job yourself, Joe.
No. I guess we couldn't have done better. Now, look. As soon as the cab drives up in front of the station, I'll pay the guy. We'll separate.
Uh-huh.
That should be about 3 minutes before train time.
All right.
You go right in, head for the gates. I'll wait outside until you're out of sight. Because it could be the cops know I'm with you and be looking for a man and a woman together.
Oh, we're coming to the station. I'm nervous, Joe.
I know, Faye. Now, look, you carry a small bag here. I'll bring the big one.
You're going to get on the train, aren't you?
Oh, sure. I'll meet you in the club car just after the train pulls out. Here, driver. It's all right. Keep a chair.
Yeah, thanks, Mac.
Hurry up, Joe.
It's all right, Sally. Yeah. Still plenty of time. Train leaves on track 6. That's the gate, just beyond the information board.
Yeah, I see.
I remember, just walk through the station straight to the gate. I won't duck out on you. I'll be in the club car, just as I said.
All right, Joe. Good luck.
Yeah, same to you, honey. Oh, now beat it. See you on the train, we can celebrate.
Be careful, Joe.
Don't worry. I'll be okay.
Just a minute, lady.
Oh, say, what's the idea? Let go of my arm.
Police department, lady. Wait, you're Mrs. Peterson, aren't you?
Yes, but Joe... Joe, look out, it's the police.
Oh, so he's with you, huh?
Stop that man. Stop that man.
Let go of me, Regan. Let go. Why do you want me?
No reason to get excited about, Mrs. Peterson. Just a little matter of murder.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Now back to Boston Blackie. Arnold Peterson plots to have himself alibied by Joe Crane, whom he hired to kill his wife. But Crane refuses to kill Mrs. Peterson, and both she and Crane later attempt to leave town. Bill Smith, in the meantime, finds the helpless husband and indicates he will kill him. Boston Blackie knows that Smith has a motive to kill the dead man, but he also knows that he made a phone call to Smith at his home, 30 miles from the scene of the crime, at almost the time of the murder. Mrs. Peterson is arrested, and as we return to our story, Blackie is searching for Joe Crane, believed to be the wife's accomplice.
Hey, Tiny, can a guy get something to eat in this dive of yours?
Well, every damn Boston's Blackie. Uptown guy with a lowdown on every bad guy in the world.
The lowdown on you is you've been a pretty good boy since I cleared you of that murder rap 2 years ago.
You was a good guy to help me beat that Blackie. But I was innocent, and you always help guys who are being framed.
I sure try, Tiny.
Well, you done it. And I kept my promise, Blackie. I've been a good guy ever since. What you doing on the waterfront? Looking for trouble?
No, I'm looking for Joe Crane.
Looking for Crane in trouble is the same thing, Blackie.
But you're going to tell me where I can find him, aren't you? You know, as a sort of a favor for me, for the favor I did for you.
Oh. Sure, Blackie. You're a good guy, and I'll help you out. Joe's got a room at the Front Street Hotel, number 10.
Front Street Hotel, room number 10.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Tiny, and here's a 10 for you. So long.
Oh, thanks, Blackie. You're a good guy.
Boy, you're too sure of that. You better find out if that 10 is good.
Always making jokes, eh, Blackie? Hey, Pete. Pete.
Oh, yeah, Tiny?
Stop with that piano. Come here.
Yeah. What do you want, Tiny?
You see that good-looking guy who was just in there?
Yeah, it was Boston Blackie, wasn't it? Who's he looking for?
Joe Crane.
Huh?
I told him Crane was at the Front Street Hotel.
Uh-huh.
Crane ain't there, of course. But you run up to Wilson's rooming house and tell Crane that he better duck, because Blackie's looking for him.
Okay.
And Pete?
Yeah?
Here's $10 for yourself.
Oh, yeah.
I can't take no money from a guy and then double-cross him. I promised Blackie I'd be honest.
Who's that?
It's me, Joe. Pete. The piano player from down at Tiny's place.
What do you want?
Open up and I'll tell you.
Okay. Come on in. What's up?
Boston Blackie's looking for you, Joe. Time to give him a bum steer, but you better get another hideout just the same.
Next place he goes is with me.
Blackie!
Quick, Pete, close the door. Too late. I'm already in. And thanks for leading me here, Pete. I didn't think Tiny was telling me the truth.
Hey, your dumb piano player, yo.
Now we can take care of this guy, Joe.
He's too quick for a piano player. Pete!
Oh, now, Blackie, now...
Oh, yeah? Well... Glad I followed my hunches, Joe. When I saw this guy come out of Tiny's place in such a hurry, I figured I'd follow my hunch and him. And I did, and he led me to you.
So what?
So take a look at him down there on the floor. You want to go down with him, Joe?
No.
Then you're going down with me, down to police headquarters. I forgot to tell you, Crane. Inspector Faraday likes quiet in his office.
And you be quiet, too, Blackie.
Inspector, is that the way to talk to me after I brought Joe Crane in for you?
I found Mrs. Peterson here myself. I could have found Joe, too.
All right, let's not argue about who found whom and where. Let's find out who killed Peterson.
I think they both did.
I tell you, I didn't kill Arnold. He was alive when I left the house.
And I didn't kill him. He was alive when I left, and I left before Sally did.
Oh, it's Sally, is it, Crane?
Yeah.
Since when does murder breed familiarity?
Sally here's my ex-wife. That's one of the reasons Peterson knew about me. But what he didn't know was I couldn't kill a dame, even if she is my ex-wife.
That's some logic.
Well, what's wrong? I never killed a dame, and I'm never going to. And I didn't kill Arnold. But maybe she did, though. After I left, she shot him.
Oh, no, you killed him after I left. You came down to my place afterwards and said you wanted to go to Chicago.
Oh, sure, right, did. But Blackie, she even told me before I left the house that she was going to take care of him herself.
What do you mean by that, Mrs. Peterson?
I meant I was going to leave my husband.
Well, you left him all right. You left him dead.
He was alive when I left the house. I didn't kill him. Joe did.
You did.
You did.
Quiet, quiet.
Not going to go through all that again. I'm arresting you both on suspicion of murder. Blackie.
Yes?
What about your friend, Bill Smith? From what you told me, he had every reason to kill Peterson.
Sure he did. But Peterson was killed at 7:30. I called Smith's house in the suburbs and talked to him at 7:30. If Smith is our killer, he's got the greatest alibi I ever heard. Me. I'm not going to leave my apartment, Mary, until I get an answer to this thing.
Oh? Just how long do you think you can stand it up here, Blackie? 1 or 2 years?
The case does look just about that tough. Well, I don't know why. And I'm sure neither Joe Crane nor Mrs. Peterson killed Peterson. But if they didn't, I don't know who did, unless it was Smith. And he couldn't have done it.
No, I'm sure I don't know anything. And I'm not going to try to figure it out either. My hair will be gray soon enough as it is.
Come in.
Oh. Hello, Blackie.
Oh, Smith, good morning. Come on in.
Thank you. Blackie, I just... Oh, I didn't know you had company. I had a phone.
This is Mary Wesley, Miss Wesley. Mr. Smith.
Dear Miss Wesley.
Hey, dear Mrs. Smith.
Blackie, I just dropped in for a minute. I thought you'd be glad to know I got a bank loan today.
I'm glad to hear it, Smith. I suppose your troubles are over?
Yes, they are, with Peterson out of the way.
You know, I'd consider you a number one prospect if I hadn't called you at your house at almost the same time Peterson was killed.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I guess I had every reason in the world to kill Peterson, but I'm glad you know I didn't.
I'm positive you didn't.
Unless you could go the 30 miles from your house to Peterson's in the matter of 2 or 3 minutes.
Yes, well, humans aren't equipped with jet propulsion just yet, Blackie. Well, I won't impose any longer. Goodbye, Blackie. I'm glad to have met you, Miss Wesley.
Oh, thank you.
See you again sometime, Blackie.
Could be. Goodbye.
Blackie, something about that man I don't like.
Something about this case I don't like.
Of course. The fact you can't solve it.
Mary, Smith is a perfect suspect.
Oh?
Oh, I'd like to figure out how he could be at home at 7:30 and still kill Peterson 30 miles away at that time. He was home. I know. I phoned him.
I was here, remember?
Oh, yes. Say.
Blackie, I don't like the look on your face.
And somebody's not going to like the idea that just popped into my mind. Mary, go to your apartment, then in an hour, dial the operator and ask her to ring my number.
Oh, all right, but what for?
Never mind. Call me crazy if you want to. But I'm going to break this case wide open when you call me on the phone. I know I saw you at my apartment just a little while ago, Smith, but in the last hour, I've been doing a little thinking about you.
Well, I hope it's complimentary, Blackie.
It's complicated, Smith. Now, in spite of the fact that I called you here at your house at exactly the same moment Peterson was killed 30 miles from here, I think you killed him.
Oh, Blackie, please.
Now, listen, I don't many...
excuse me. Hello.
Hello, Blackie?
Oh, no, just a minute. Blackie, it's for you.
Oh, thanks. I've been expecting this call. Don't go away, Smith. I'm not through with you.
I'm not going anywhere. Just over here to give you a little privacy.
Okay. Hello, Mary.
Oh, hello, Blackie. Well, I'm in my apartment, and it's been an hour, so I did what you told me to do.
You dialed the operator and asked her to ring my number?
Mm-hmm. Plaza 10710. So what have you proved?
Plenty, Mary. Do you have any idea where I am?
In your apartment, of course. The operator rang your number.
I'm in Bill Smith's house, Mary, out in the suburbs.
What?
But if I didn't tell you so, you'd believe that I was in my apartment, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, I certainly would.
I'll talk to you later. Call Faraday and tell him I'm bringing in Peterson's killer. Okay, Smith, let's go.
Go, Blackie Worm.
Headquarters.
What?
I'm turning you over to Faraday for the murder of Arnold Peterson.
Oh, now, Blackie, let's not start.
I know you killed him, Smith. And I know why I thought you were here at the time Peterson was murdered.
But I was here. You talked to me over the phone, didn't you?
Mm-hmm, that's right. But you were in Peterson's house when I talked to you. I know how you worked it, too.
You do?
First you phoned me, then pretended someone was at the door and asked me to call you back in a few minutes.
Well, that's interesting, if true.
It is true, all of it. Before I called you back, you phoned the operator and asked her to switch all calls for your Oakville number to Peterson's number.
And
that's exactly what was done when I called back. Then, as soon as you'd established that you were at home, you hung up and shot Peterson.
You don't know that that could even be done.
I know it can be done because I just did it.
Oh?
That was Mary Wesley on the phone just then. I talked to the telephone company before I got here. And when she asked the operator for my number, she got me here at your house.
Well, I
Hey, Smith,
that...
I told you not to go away.
I'm not going where you want
oh,
me
no.
to go.
Oh, no. That's the way I like murderers. Down and out.
Blackie, before I go, I want to thank you for helping me.
Well, I wasn't necessarily helping you, Mrs. Peterson. I was just trying to find out who killed your husband. Incidentally, I'm waiting in Faraday's office to read a copy of Smith's confession. Don't you want to wait here with me?
Well, yes. Well, the sooner I get out of here, the better. My ex-husband, Joe, you know, has been sent back to Kansas.
That's because he's wanted out there for the same kind of thing that we thought he was wanted for here.
Well, I'm glad he didn't kill Arnold. I'm glad you could prove who did, even though Arnold always threatened to kill me. Did Mr. Smith really kill my husband?
Yes, he made a complete confession, Mrs. Peterson, and the telephone company verified my theory that he had them switch all phone calls from his Oakville number to your number. That's how I could phone his number and think I was talking to him at home when actually he was at your house.
Probably standing over Arnold's body.
No, he didn't kill your husband until a minute or two after I phoned him. He knew I was going to phone him back because he'd asked me to. And he waited for my call knowing that I'd give him the perfect alibi.
Well, it wasn't so perfect, Blackie. He was caught just the same.
They're all caught, Mrs. Peterson. And a murderer always gets paid off, you know. Not in currency, of course. Just in current.
From October of 1947, it's been Richard Colmer starring in Boston Blackie with The Hired Killer. Well, that's all we have time for today, but be with us again next week at this very same time and invite a friend to listen and together enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those exciting days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you.
Preceding program copyright Edgewater Productions, all rights reserved.